Welcome to Soil Stories with Nick and Leanna. Episode 4, How Glaciers Shaped Our Landscape.
As we begin our journey through the amazing and diverse ways that soils are formed, we are going to first focus on soil parent material.
The parent material of a soil is the stage upon which processes of soil formation are played out through time. And in glaciated regions, soil parent materials are often very distinct from the bedrock that underlies them, because they were transported from other areas and moved around prior to being deposited. Minnesota is filled with a rich glacial history. With the exception of the southeastern and southwestern corners of Minnesota, most of our state was glaciated in the most recent glacial cycle, and almost all of it was glaciated at some point in time in the distant past.
Therefore, to understand soil parent materials in glaciated regions, we must understand how glaciers shaped our landscape and the materials they left behind.
I am always putting evidence together. That's the first thing.
Dr. Carrie Jennings has taught glacial geology at the University of Minnesota in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences for the last 26 years. She's currently the Research and Policy Director for Freshwater Society, which focuses on Minnesota's water quality and quantity. Prior to joining Freshwater, Carrie was with the Minnesota Geological Survey for over 20 years and has mapped glacial materials across about half of our state.
You know, every little shovelful of dirt is evidence, and it's going into kind of building this bigger picture that I've been working on for 30 years. I mean, some of it comes from understanding how glaciers move, and I've traveled to a lot of glaciated environments. We're lucky to have those available to us. I've been to Greenland, Iceland, Antarctica, Alaska, watched processes at the ice margin. It's a little harder to see things under the ice, but you can get into tunnels sometimes. Yeah, glaciers basically are just snow on snow. So you get a winter where the snow doesn't melt completely, and you get more snow on top of that. You get enough snow piled up, and I think anybody who lives in Minnesota understands that it kind of packs in and will eventually turn to ice. And thick enough ice will eventually start to deform. So it's just a matter of continuously piling up material. And then I think of the spreading of it as like pancake batter or something that is viscous, but moving slowly by gravity. The gravitational forces are enough to spread an ice cap in a kind of a circular fashion, like a pancake. But there are other interesting things that happen at the bottom of glaciers involving melting, localized melting. And so once you start to get a little localized melting and water concentrated at the bottom of the glacier, you can actually send it a lot farther south or spread it out in different ways. And so the ice that reached Minnesota was mostly these long tongues or lobes of ice that were facilitated to move farther south by having a lot of meltwater at the bed.
Well, in popular culture, the Ice Age is portrayed as a single event where glaciers grew, advanced, and retreated. Evidence from landscapes and ocean sediments have long established that, in fact, Earth has experienced many glacial cycles, where continental ice sheets have grown and advanced, followed by interglacial periods when the ice sheets receded.
Early on, mappers recognized the glacial deposits just by being different from the rocks that were buried by them. So there are a few parts of Minnesota where you can actually see the rocks, you know, in the Minnesota River Valley, southeastern Minnesota, up in the Boundary Waters, Canoe Area Wilderness. And then you can see the sediment that's on top of them and recognize the mismatch. You know, it's from somewhere else. So the first mappers had the fundamental question of which way did this sediment come in from? They didn't necessarily assume that glaciers came from the north. We think that's kind of funny now, but because it's colder there. But that was something they had to discover from just fundamental things. So it was these exotic materials that were spread across the landscape that were the first clues to glaciation. Of course, in earlier times, those had been interpreted as the effects of a global flood, Noah's flood. And then we started understanding that the soil profiles developed in those different sediment layers were different. Some of them were much more developed than others. In Minnesota in particular, in the southwest corner and the southeast corner, there are much older soil profiles than in kind of the middle and central parts of the state. You can extend that to the other parts of the upper Midwest and see that older and older soil profiles developed farther to the south. And in that way, the soil scientists helped the geologist understand that there were four exposed layers that represented very different timelines. And so the early mappers thought we had four different glaciations, and they named them for the states that they were best exposed in.
So these four glacial cycles were named the Wisconsinan, the Illinoisan, the Kansan, and the Nebraskan, in order from youngest to oldest.
And if you think about where those states are, Wisconsin, Illinois, Kansas, and Nebraska, they get further and further to the south. So the oldest glaciation is exposed farthest south. With a little logical thinking, you start to realize that that's probably just a matter of preservation, that there could have been older glaciations that were less extensive to the south, but they're buried or eroded. So we originally thought, maybe even at the beginning of my career, they were still emphasizing these four major glaciations, but we have a much more complete record of glacial history in the oceans. And I won't get into the details of that, but that's where the sediment ends up. And that's where we have a record that is constant. And now we recognize that we've had glaciations on and off for the last 2.58 million years. And in that time, we've had 20 or so major glacial cycles.
That marine record has changed the way that we view glacial cycles. Whereas originally four major glaciations were recognized, now we know that there were many more, varying in extent and length. It's much more typical today to refer to the most recent glacial cycle as the Wisconsinan, the next most recent cycle as the Illinoisan, and all others before that as pre-Illinoisan.
They've certainly been bigger in the last million years, maybe the last 700 or 800,000 years. And there were a lot more frequent, smaller glaciations in the million or so years before that. But we've had a lot of back and forth of ice masses across this part of the continent.
Although previous glacial cycles have modified our landscapes in significant ways, the most recent glacial cycle has had the most dramatic effects on the soils and landscapes we see in Minnesota today. The main ice sheet which developed during the last glaciation, known as the Laurentide Ice Sheet, pretty much covered Canada.
And it sent out lobes and ice streams into the sea along all its margins, except for maybe the Canadian Rockies, where it butted up against a mountain range. But the Great Lakes and the sediment, the sedimentary rock around them, kind of helped these ice lobes become kind of robust, and they moved very far to the south in the Great Lakes area. And one of the ways they move, in addition to this water at the bed, is they start to grind up sedimentary rock that's easier to erode and create kind of a paste. Think of like a concrete slurry underneath the glacier. And that paste is kind of forming a shear zone on the bottom of this moving ice, and it's being dragged along by the ice. It might even be eroding the bed a little bit. And so it's continuously incorporating a little bit of material from the bottom, but it's just this kind of wet slurry of a mixture of clay, silt, sand, and then rock fragments. So that is what the glacier is, that carpet of moving debris is what the glacier is gradually spreading like spackling compound across Minnesota as it moves. So these ice streams, these more rapidly moving areas of ice within the ice sheet that are being facilitated by the kind of the wetness and the material, the sediment that it's incorporating, they're actually able to convey material from wherever the ice stream starts. And this is usually in these troughs that form up by Great Slave, Great Bear, Lake Winnipeg, the Great Lakes. So it's incorporating a lot of material there. It's excavating those troughs, and then it's spreading it farther to the south, in most cases to the south. And it's only as the glacier, as the ice stream and the ice lobe starts to kind of slow down and lose its ability to carry that material, that it just leaves this blanket behind. And we had ice streams entering Minnesota from all parts of the Laurentide ice sheet. They came to from the northeast as far away as the Ungava Peninsula, east of Hudson Bay. And they from the northwest, they pretty much came across Alberta and Saskatchewan into Minnesota, mostly incorporating the most material where they originated and then spreading it farther south. So I can look at the sediment at the surface in Minnesota and find things from Alberta and from Hudson Bay, the Hudson Bay lowlands that have been conveyed here. So the ice streams that came from the northwest, from as far away as Saskatchewan and beyond, they were coming over primarily shale, bedrock, and related sedimentary rock that was deposited by a deep sea during the Cretaceous period. So they're bringing in clay-dominated materials with a lot of limestone fragments ground up. So they're going to be loam to clay loam, glacial sediment, and they're going to be alkaline because they have this carbonate ground up in them. They're great farming soils if you can drain them adequately. You can contrast that with the material coming in from the northeast through the Lake Superior Basin. And that's also grinding up sedimentary rock, but it's a sandstone. It's a red sandstone. And there's not very much shale or silt-sized fragments in the till from the northeast. And it's also, there is not much carbonate. So this is usually sandy loam or even a loamy sand. So that one is acidic. It's sandy. It's red when it's oxidized. And it's kind of pinkish gray usually when it's unoxidized. It oxidizes pretty quickly because it's so coarse textured. So not ideal for farming because of the acidity and the texture.
While many soils in Minnesota are formed from sediment which was draped over the landscape like a blanket when the ice melted, this is known as glacial till. Other soils are formed in sediment that was initially carried by the ice, but then moved around by a massive amount of meltwater and high winds associated with glacial activity and retreat.
So far I've focused on the actual till, the sediment carried and deposited directly by the ice that spread like the spackling compound. And I usually think of this as I'm giving you the matrix texture, the loams compared to the loamy sands or the clay loams. And there will be rocks suspended in that matrix. It is unsorted material. But the glacier also melts, and the meltwater moving away from the edge of the ice is going to sort that material. So you're going to sort it usually in broad braided streams that will sort the sediment into sands and gravelly sands, cobbly sands. So you have these broad outwash plains, we call them. Sometimes that water is impounded by ridges or its own moraines, which are ridges that form in the front of the glacier. And so you can get a lake sediment. Lake sediments will probably be sandy at their margins where the beaches or deltas are. Then as you go into further and further offshore environments, you're going to move through different grain sizes like silt to clay. And then in the middle, depending on the way the lake freezes in the winter, you might get alternating layers of silt and clay.
Here's where it gets really cool. The lakes that Kerry is talking about are not modern-day lakes. Instead, they were formed by the damming or impoundment of glacial meltwater, by landscape features that created lakes which might have existed for hundreds to thousands of years. But once the glaciers melted, these lakes drained or dried up, and now these former lake beds exist as incredibly flat landscapes that have unique soils, formed in what we call glacio-lacustrine, for glacial lake, or just lacustrine, parent materials. There are at least six large former glacial lake beds recognized in the state of Minnesota today, but one of them, called Glacial Lake Agassiz, was a monster.
Glacial Lake Agassiz, one of my favorite things to talk about. As the Laurentide Ice Sheet was retreating from Minnesota, a small moraine dam out by Ortonville in Big Stone County.
For anyone looking on a map who doesn't know where that is, it's the little sticky-outy notch in western Minnesota. You can see it in the state outline.
Started holding back some of the melting glacier. And if you think about the Red River watershed and the clayey nature of the parent material there, that is the bottom of this glacial lake, Agassiz. And as the glacier retreated farther and farther to the north, this lake just grew. For some reason, that moraine dam was just oriented exactly right to hold what became the largest of the glacial lakes. Imagine all of the Great Lakes combined held behind this moraine dam in on the elbow of western Minnesota. So it grew to the point where something happened, big iceberg calving event maybe, or something destabilized that moraine dam to the south. And we had at least one, probably multiple large floods from that lake that basically tore a swath across the state. And that is the 1 mile wide valley of the Minnesota River. So it was like pulling the thread from a piece of fabric. Ever since then, the tributaries to the Minnesota River have also been unraveling because of this central thread that was pulled out, this central valley that was cut. They began as waterfalls into that river valley, and ever since then have been eroding up into their watersheds to kind of adjust their gradients to this big destabilizing event that occurred 13,400 calendar years ago. So that makes the Minnesota River watershed one of the primary hotspots for sediment, for erosion, and it's a target of a lot of conservation efforts right now.
So far, we've talked about soil parent materials that can be sorted either by fast-moving water from glaciers, outwash, or deposited in slow-moving water in former glacial lakes, lacustrine. But there's another agent that can move sediment around near glaciers in cold, unvegetated environments, wind.
The other things that glaciers are is windy environments. And so further away from the ice margin, these persistent, what we call katabatic winds, density-driven cold air winds that sweep off the glacier, they'll blow away anything they can in the glacier foreground. And so you can get dunes. You certainly have large areas of sand dunes. I think of the Anoka Sand Plain and up east of Lake Winnipegoshish in the Mississippi River headwaters as being former sand dune areas. And then once the sand drops out of suspension, the silt also that's been airborne can drop out, and you get farther from the glacier margin, thick layers of silt and very fine sand deposited. And that's called LESS, L-O-E-S-S, a German word.
Here in Minnesota, glaciers have influenced every aspect of our landscape and are responsible for the distribution of soil parent materials that we see today. Carrie has been studying glacial landscapes her entire career, and she says that glaciers modify everything when they advance.
It's going to completely change the way air moves. It's going to change the way water moves. And it's going to certainly do some damage to whatever it's underneath.
At least for us Minnesotans, it's a glacial world, and we're just living in it.
Until next time, you guys, be well.
Be safe.
And be smart.